Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Hardwood Paroxysm. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @redrock_bball, and we're back doing another of the season preview podcasts. And today's topic, we're going to be talking Indiana Pacers, and I'm joined by the editor-in-chief of Hardwood Paroxysm, Ian Levy. Ian, how are you going?
I'm doing well.
It's good to have you on. Now, before we get started, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
At Hickory High is my Twitter handle.
So go ahead and follow Ian over there on Twitter. And also make sure you're checking out all the great work that Ian is putting out over at Hardwood Paroxysm. And where else can people find your work?
I write weekly for Sporting News, and I write weekly for The Cauldron, which just joined Sports Illustrated. So you can find me both of those places regularly and occasionally other places as well.
Yeah, I saw that news about The Cauldron. That's pretty exciting stuff. So head across and check out that stuff over there as well. Now, Ian, we're going to be talking Indiana Pacers, a team who a disappointing season last season, but it was to be expected. With the injury to Paul George, but this year and this offseason in particular led to a lot of not even puzzling moves, but moves that make you question what's happening for this season. Did they get better? Are they the same? Is there pluses, minuses? How does it all work out? How do you think the team looks heading into this season as opposed to what they were, say, before the Paul George injury last year?
I think it's really hard to tell. So the big story this summer is that they're going to change dramatically their style of play. They shipped out Hibbert and West. They've loaded up on wings who can theoretically slide up and play some power forward too. So there's this idea that they're going to play small lineups. They're going to play versatile. They're going to really play up tempo. And so it's hard to tell how that works with the roster they have, how the guys who've been on the team for a while playing in the style that they played in the past, which was really different. How do those guys adjust? And then this might be me just sort of being cynical, but I have some questions about how committed they really are to sort of going all in on this style. If there are sort of still traces of the system that they used before and how they've played in the past, and they try and make that work with this new roster, I think things could get really ugly.
Yeah, I'm of that feeling as well. I don't know, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, I sent out a tweet saying, yeah, which team do you think is going to have the biggest increase in wins from last year to this year? And my initial pick was Miami Heat, but I had so many people coming back at me saying, no, it's the Pacers. They're going to get 50 wins, and I just don't see it happening. I know Paul George is back, but all the other changes, I can't see them making that leap up to 50 wins.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they got that high. I think their ceiling maybe is closer to trying to push a couple games above 500 and probably fighting for one of those last two playoff spots in the East. I mean, obviously they still have Paul George and a lot of talent, but they're making such a sort of dramatic shift that there's this question about how it all works. I think it'll be a big adjustment.
Now, when we talk about all the changes that happened with this team, there was a lot that happened throughout the offseason. So they added quite a few guys, and it's going to obviously affect the makeup of the team. Monte Ellis, probably the biggest acquisition. He's going to come in there and play the shooting guard position. They added Jordan Hill, Chase Budinger, Tony Douglas, and Glenn Robinson III's come across as well. Now, Robinson's not going to have a big role. Douglas, I'm not really sure what sort of role Douglas is going to have, because really they don't have a backup point guard on this team. He's shown stretches of okayness in his time in New York and in Miami, and even in New Orleans last season. He was okay as a backup guy, but they could run Rodney Stuckey as the backup point guard. They drafted Joseph Young, who we're going to talk about in a little bit as well. But the biggest impact guys who have arrived are Monte Ellis and Jordan Hill. How do you see Hill fitting? We'll start with him first. How do you see him fitting into this team? And do you think he's going to be the starter from day one? Is he a guy that's going to get big minutes, or is he just going to work in with that big man rotation?
I think my guess is that he's a starter on opening night, whether it's at power forward next to Mahinmi or whether he starts at center is sort of the question. And I think how they use Hill is really indicative of how invested they are in this style. I think every minute that Hill plays at power forward is probably a losing proposition for them. If they want to spread the floor and and they want to attack. You know, Hill sort of doesn't fit with that. You know, at center, he's mobile, can dive on the pick and roll, you know, crash the glass, run the floor, that kind of stuff. But when he's at power forward, and if they're playing him next to Mahinmi or Miles Turner, then they're sort of losing all of that spacing that this new system is supposed to bring them.
Yeah, because he can't shoot, he can't hit outside shots, but he is, as you said, he can be a really aggressive rebounder on both ends of the floor. And yeah, pick and rolls, dunks, alley oops, lobs, all that sort of stuff. He doesn't have a great offensive game, but he's an energy sort of player, and that works best when he's close to the basket. Now, he hasn't ever really been able to get close to 30 minutes in his career, and a lot of that was conditioning issues. Even on a team that sucked so bad that the Lakers did last year, he wasn't able to get huge amount of minutes, and he was benched down the stretch as well. And that doesn't really look great in terms of on his playing resume that he's going to be out there and be able to play big minutes. I'm glad they did bring him in so they could get a monopoly on people with the surname Hill. with every player with the surname Hill now plays for Indiana, so that's good to know. At least you know if someone mentions Hill, you're talking about a Pacers play. You just got to narrow it down to which one of the three. But I think I agree with you that he is going to be the starter on opening night, but I can't see him in a situation where he's going to get in excess of 30 minutes. What about Monte Ellis? He came across, he's going to be playing in between George Hill and Paul George. He really struggled for Dallas last season in the second half of the year. He was abysmal in stretches. Look, he started off the season really well, and I think part of it is the Rajon Rondo effect impacted him in terms of Ellis liked having the ball in his hands. He liked being a distributor as a shooting guard as well, and I think that's going to suit him in Indiana, or that's going to fit what he does in Indiana, because George Hill as the point guard is not really necessarily a true point guard in that sense, and not in the Rajon Rondo type. I think that Alice, hopefully he arrests that slide, but he is still always a worry with his shot selection, and the way he tailed off last year was not good. What are your thoughts on the signing?
I think I was surprised that they chased him, and I'm not huge on the signing from a team perspective. I think Ellis will probably have a better season than he did. Certainly that second half in Dallas, and it's a better fit than playing next to Rondo, certainly. But in terms of how the team fits, you know, they had, I don't want to compare him to Lance Stephenson on a personality spectrum, but I think the style of play to Lance Stephenson is similar. The tendency to dominate the ball, the tendency to sometimes take questionable shots. It seemed like that really killed their offensive chemistry 2 years ago, and it really affected both Paul George and George Hill. And so what he does on the floor seems so similar that plugging him in, it seems like it's going to have a negative impact on George Hill. I think, you know, Hill was, I thought Hill was fantastic last season. I thought it, by far his best season as a pro. And it was really nice to see sort of the shackles taken off, you know, in all the time he'd been in Indiana, they had sort of tried to push him into this like floor general, traditional point guard kind of role. And mostly that meant he was, you know, running the occasional pick and roll with David West and then just kind of standing in the corner. And to see him really be the lead guard, have the freedom to attack offensively, create shots for himself. I thought he was phenomenal last year, and looking at the lineup now with Paul George back and putting Monte Ellis in between them, I think, you know, it puts Hill back in that role where he's just kind of standing in the corner, which is, you know, kind of a bummer.
Yeah. And that's definitely not Hill's best role. He was amazing, but especially the last 2 to 3 months of the season, he was fantastic. He was putting up great numbers and he looked good while he was doing it. But yeah, Monte is going to take the ball out of his hands, which is a little bit of a worry for George Hill and what he's going to be able to produce this season. Now, with Monte Ellis, in terms of his fantasy numbers, I think that he's getting a little bit overvalued. People are drafting him inside the top 50. He was definitely so far from that last year in that second half. I do think he'll be better than that, but I'm not sure that I want to take a look at him inside the top 50. I've got him sort of sitting just around pick 60 at the moment.
The other thing to think about with Ellis too is, you know, when he left Golden State, his sort of his stock, for lack of a better word, was so low. because he had become such an isolation player, and he blossomed in Dallas because he got to play pick and roll with Dirk Nowitzki. And you look at this Pacers roster, and I don't know who he plays. I don't know who's the big screening for him that makes that pick and roll as dynamic as it was in Dallas. And so, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to me for his numbers to certainly efficiency wise to not be great, because he's either going to end up sort of being pushed into more isolations, or he's going to be running pick and rolls with somebody like Jordan Hill or, you know, LaVoy Allen, which is just, you know, it's not going to have the same kind of impact.
Look, I think that Monte is probably closer to Milwaukee Bucks Monte than he is to 2013-14 Dallas Mavericks Monte. I think he's going to be closer than the guy who's a 42% sort of shooter, not that 45% increased efficiency sort of guy. He doesn't hit three-pointers. He's going to give you nice assist numbers. But, I used to be all over Monte for fantasy value when he was in Dallas, but the end of last season and this change to this new team does worry me quite a bit. Chase Budinger, he's... The thing that we hear all this talk about Paul George going to play the four a lot of the time. And I think that's fine. I understand small ball. But then I go, who's going to play the three? They don't have a guy who's ready made to go out there and be a big contributor at the three. Solomon Hill played the three in Paul George's place last year. Not all that well. CJ Miles had some decent stretches. And they brought in Chase Budinger now. Where does Budinger sit in relation to, say, Solomon Hill and CJ Miles to you? Does he leapfrog those guys? Does he become that pseudo starting three if George moves to the four?
I think the attraction with Budinger is that he's a guy, I think the Pacers maybe see him as a guy who could potentially slide up and play the four in small ball lineups too, that he's, you know, maybe sort of a watered down version of Chandler Parsons. And so I think that was the appeal there, was that he can contribute on the wing, and that if they want to sort of really, really push that small ball philosophy, that he's one of those guys who could slide up a little bit. I don't know how much Glenn Robinson will play, but I think he's another guy that maybe they see in that role. I think, you know, I thought Solomon Hill did a nice job last season. The fact that he sort of still doesn't have an outside shot, and that with all the minutes that he got last year, that never sort of materialized and never really improved. I wouldn't be surprised if he was the guy who sort of got pushed out of the rotation a little bit. I think Budinger's ability to shoot, Budinger's size and ability to slide up, I think he probably leapfrogs Hill in the rotation. And I think CJ Miles is one of those guys who's more valuable the less he needs to do. And so, you know, with Paul George back, Miles can be just sort of more of a spot up shooter. And so I think that helps his value.
Yeah, I would agree with all that. I've got Budinger projected at more minutes than Solomon Hill, and Miles can play split between the two and the three as well, and he's going to be there as more of a specialist three-point shooter, which he can do really, really well when he gets that opportunity. The guys that left Indiana, there's a number of guys. David West has gone to San Antonio. Luis Scola up to Toronto. CJ Watson's headed to Orlando. Roy Hibbert, we know, was traded to the Lakers. Chris Copeland gone to Milwaukee, Donald Sloan to the Nets, and Damian Ruiz, as part of that Chase Budinger deal, has gone to the Timberwolves. Who's the biggest loss there? Is it Hibbert? Is it West? Is it CJ Watson as the backup point guard? Like, who do you find is the biggest loss on this team?
I mean, it's West and Hibbert. I think everybody else is mostly irrelevant. Although I thought Rudesh did some nice things at the end of last year, and with the way the team is looking to play, you know, he was a guy who could space the floor and slide between the three and the four defensively. So I was surprised to see that they moved him. But it's West and Hibbert. West for the past couple of years, you know, he was brought in for his skills, but also sort of his veteran emotional leadership, and he definitely was a guy who, when things got rough the past couple of years, you know, he was a guy who would command the ball and would, isolate at the elbow or take his man down in the post and sort of help things reset, help the team sort of collect themselves. And, you know, he was a guy who played with a lot of intensity, and I think they'll miss some of that sort of emotional leadership, for lack of a better word. And I think, I think they're going to miss Hibbert a ton. They, you know, it's hard to say exactly where they're going to end up. The past couple of years, they've been this phenomenal defensive team. And I think, you know, George deserves a lot of credit and the other players deserve a lot of credit. But Hibbert was the backbone of that. That defense was not elite without Hibbert back there. And so all of a sudden he's gone. I think they're going to be much worse defensively. The hope is that they're better offensively and that it all sort of equalizes and they end up sort of in the same place. But I think, you know, it's hard to say they're going to specifically miss Hibbert because they're trying to go in a different direction anyway. It's not like they're trying to do the same things with a different player, but you know, I think when you look at their record at the end of the season, you know, they might have been better off if they had kept Hibbert in the short term. But I think they saw that their ceiling with Hibbert was not as high as they wanted it to be.
Yeah, that's pretty much spot on to what I think. I think it's going to be a big transition in terms of what they're doing, and that might take a year or so to really get going as they transition from a defensive identity into an up-tempo, small ball, mm-hmm. offensive sort of lineup. Let's talk about the young guys on this team. Ian, the guys who've been drafted in the last couple of seasons, for people who are in your dynasty fantasy leagues and want to know some young players, if we go through the roster, we've got Miles Turner, who was drafted this year. We've got Joseph Young and Rakeem Christmas, both from the second round this year. And then from last year's draft, there's not a huge amount there. We've got Glenn Robinson III, who, again, he may not even make the final roster when they cut it down to 15. I think we really need to focus our attention on Miles Turner as the number one rookie here. Do you think he's going to be the starting center?
I don't. My guess is that it would be Mahinmi or Hill. But I, you know, I'm not sure. I was not a fan of the pick when Turner was made. You know, admittedly, I'm not great with scouting collegiate prospects, and I don't have nearly as much time as I'd like to pay attention to college players. But my perception of Turner from what I've seen, what I had seen of him in college and everything that I had read was that he was sort of an enormous project, you know, that he had this tantalizing skill set. He was a little more mobile than Hibbert, although still sort of plodding in the open floor. But that he, you know, had great defensive potential. And then that the big plus was that he, you know, that he had a jump shot, and he shot less than 30% on threes in college, but there was, you know, he had the form and the willingness to take it. And so there was sort of this idea that he was going to develop into a 3-point shooter. And I think that was a big part of his appeal. If the Pacers are eventually going to play, you know, are going to commit to this style long-term, if they can get a five who can defend the rim and shoot 3-pointers, you know, that could be the key to everything. But I didn't think he would be a guy who could make an immediate impact. And then he was phenomenal at Orlando Summer League. You know, he scored, he showed some polished post moves. You know, he hit a ton of pick and pop jumpers, which Sam Vecenie from CBS Sports wrote a big thing about how that he essentially didn't get any pick and pop opportunities at Texas. He was either in the post or he was spotting up. And so that was nice to see. Yeah, I think he made two of three three-pointers in the five games he played. But he looked really, really good in summer league. But still, even with all that, I think that's maybe indicative that he's a little bit further along than we thought. But I think still the team will be cautious with him. I still don't think he's a guy who they're going to throw out there and he's going to play 30 minutes and you know, be a candidate for rookie of the year. And so I think the team will take it slow with him. They'll want to give him some learning opportunities. He'll play, you know, maybe 20, 25 minutes a game, but I don't think he's going to be the starter, at least not initially.
I would agree with that, because I say this to many of the people that come on the podcast, Ian, about rookies and rookie centers in particular. I think it was the last 25 years there's been five rookie centers who have played 32 minutes a game. And that's, you know, that's a huge, I think it was like, and it's Shaq, Mutombo, I don't even remember who the other ones were, but they're guys who were like, yeah, the elite of the elite, and it just doesn't happen anymore. But rookies don't play big minutes in general, and rookie big men, they don't. Now, you mentioned his summer league stats, they were crazy good. He played 29 minutes a game, he had 18.7 points, he hit two threes in those three games, over 8 rebounds, and 4.3 blocks. On 61% shooting and 80% from the free throw line, so he doesn't have any of those issues in terms of not being a good free throw shooter. a lot of the big guys at blocks struggle in that sort of sense and have to be taken out of games maybe at the end of a game due to that struggle. But he doesn't have that. But you're right, he's not going to get 30 minutes. I do think he's going to be an interesting fantasy prospect because of those great percentages, the big block numbers, and then he adds a little bit of three-point shooting into that, and that's going to be really handy. But to expect 30 minutes out of him is going to be tough. A guy that I do really like that the Pacers drafted is Joseph Young out of Oregon, the guard. I wouldn't be shocked if he had a bigger role this season than what we might be anticipating at this point, just because, as I mentioned, there's not a huge amount happening in the backcourt behind George Hill. There's Rodney Stuckey, and then we've got Tony Douglas. And Rodney Stuckey's a guy who we know who he is. He had that odd stretch last season where he started hitting three-pointers, which is completely unrelated to anything he's ever done in his career before. What do you think about Young?
You know, he was pretty impressive in Summer League too. I think, again, there's so many things, not to just keep beating a dead horse, but there's so many things about the Pacers this year that they are sort of implying are going to be different. And it's hard to trust how different they're going to be until you sort of actually see it. Yeah. And so, the past couple of years, I would have thought Young would be a guy who essentially wouldn't play, Vogel, not that he has a bias against young players or new players or anything like that, but he definitely seems like a guy who trusts the guys who know the system, the guys who know their roles. And so much of what the Pacers did was sort of predicated on how the five guys on the floor sort of fit together and did their jobs, sort of as one unit. Thinking about sort of how they've handled these kinds of things in the past, I would expect that George Hill, Ellis, and Stuckey, the three of them, would sort of handle the ball handling responsibilities, and that, between the three of them, they would sort of handle all the de facto point guard minutes. But it's possible that Young sneaks in there. He's probably going to be the fastest guy on the roster. He's little, so there's a defensive cost, I think, for playing him. He's a guy who, if pace and transition offense is really as important as the Pacers say it's going to be, then, he's a guy who could make a difference off the bench.
And he's a guy to me that as a second-round draft choice. Yeah, there's always one or two guys that are picked in the second round that have an impact in their rookie season and further on. And I think he's a guy that if you're looking in dynasty leagues, there's going to be some value in him because I think that he could become a decent role player, a decent rotation player in the next couple of seasons, whether that's on this team or another team. I think there's a lot to like about Joseph Young. Another second round draft choice in the Pacers, though, is Rakeem Christmas. Well, he wasn't drafted by the Pacers. He was traded to the Pacers. And with the front court lack of depth, he could be in line for a decent role as well, or a decent role for a second round draft choice anyway, because we know that they've got a whole new front court. Yan Mahimi is not blowing anyone's mind with what he's going to do. Miles Turner's there. Jordan Hill, we've talked about him. Who else? They got LaVoy Allen, Shane Whittington. Like, there's minutes that are going to be there for him if he shows that he can produce at a decent level. So Christmas is another guy that we might, especially if an injury happens into one of these guys ahead of him, we might see him getting some decent minutes. I'm excited to see what he's going to be able to do.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who could slip into the rotation too. Same kind of thing where he can sort of slide back and forth between the three and the four a little bit. He's a decent jump shooter, and that's gonna that's one of those things that is sort of supposed to be a new big deal, is that making sure that they've got shooting on the floor at all times. And so he's a guy that they can they can guarantee that they're going to get some spacing with him. I can't remember now off the top of my head, but I think they traded a second round pick for him.
Yeah, I think that's right.
A future second rounder for him. So I would assume that if they made that move to bring him in now, that they have some intention of keeping him on the roster and at least seeing what he can do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Let's talk about breakout candidates, Ian, players who might go from being a good player to a great player or from an irrelevant player into a decent role player. There's always a few of those throughout the league, not necessarily for each team, but is there someone on this team, if it was going to be someone on the Pacers who becomes that breakout player, who do you think it would be?
Man, I don't know. I feel like they're a team where everybody's games or maybe everybody's stat lines might take some small steps backwards this year. Not necessarily because people will play worse, but just because It seems like they're going to be so perimeter focused, and they've added so much depth on the perimeter. So it seems like, Ellis might take a small step back because he's not going to have the pick and roll partner that he used to. You know, Hill's going to take a small step back because he's going to be playing next to Ellis. You know, Stuckey's probably not going to play as many minutes as he did last year. I suppose if there was a long shot, maybe it would be Paul George. Maybe this new role of sliding up and playing some power forward, is a chance for him to really shine. Maybe all the time away last year, finally getting his body healthy. The six games or whatever that he played at the end of last season was, there's not much there. And so maybe he's back to sort of, being a fringe MVP candidate, all NBA kind of player. And I guess maybe that could constitute a breakout kind of season.
I tend to agree with you. There's no one who I really go, yeah, this guy's going to have a great opportunity. Solomon Hill is heading into his third year, which is generally key for young guys. But I think his role is going to be much reduced from what it was last season. And probably even further reduced with the acquisition of Budinger. I don't really see anyone being able to take that. You can't really classify rookies as that because we haven't seen them play.
So
no one really stands out to me. Next one to look at is sort of sleeper players, so players who are going to exceed their draft position. And again, I don't really see many people here. I think that Monte Ellis is getting overdrafted. I think George Hill's getting slightly overdrafted. Miles Turner maybe, but it's hard for me to recommend taking a rookie. Like, His draft position is 136, which is quite late. I'd be happy taking him another two rounds ahead of that, just around the top 100. But otherwise, I think everyone else is either rated where they should or they're overrated in terms of what their impact is. Because again, there is that sort of general mentality out there. And I use that question that I posed to people about who's going to have the biggest improvement, and everyone was jumping all over the paces. There's a general sense that this team is going to be the number one seed from 2013-14. And it's just not going to be the case.
Yeah, I think they're a ways away from that. I like Budinger quite a bit. And he might be a guy who, I'm sure some people look at this roster and see him not playing very much at all. I think he really fits well with what they want to do. I would expect his shooting numbers to bounce back. He seems like a guy who would take a lot of threes, shoot a decent percentage, maybe get you some steals and rebounds. And I think CJ Miles too, his percentages bounce back by the end of the year. He started the year shooting horribly, but I think his efficiency numbers should be better. His turnover should probably be down. He's essentially just going to be catching and shooting three pointers, and that's good for him too.
I think in regard to Budinger, a lot of people wouldn't understand the last month of last season. He was a top 50 fantasy player. He was getting 34 minutes a night in Minnesota, almost 15 points, 1.5 threes, 1.5 steals, 5 rebounds, on 50% shooting and 86% from the line. They're fantastic numbers. Now, he's not playing 34 minutes a night in Indiana, most likely, but if they decide we're going to run Paul George exclusively at the four, then they need someone to fill the minutes at the three, and he could be a 25, 26 minute a night guy, and then there's a lot that's going to be riding on him, and I think he can deliver. And there's also the risk that Paul George has issues with his leg.
Certainly.
Has to miss games, has to limit time, and Budinger's going to be he's very, very underrated. I think he was putting up some great numbers before he had the knee injury. That took him a while to get back from. And then the end of last season, I know Minnesota was destroyed in terms of who they had out there. There was no one left, but he still was able to do it. And he's not in a situation where he's completely buried here. So he's an interesting prospect. The other side of things, someone who is overvalued heading into drafts. Well, there are a couple of guys that I look at on this Pacers roster and go, yeah, I think they're being drafted too high. George Hill, again, his average draft position of 68 is not horrible, but he's going to take a step back. But the one that really sticks in my mind is Rodney Stuckey. He's been picked at 134. I've got him outside the top 200. What is he going to do? He's going to have to play back up behind Hill and back up behind Monte. And he's just not a great fantasy guy anyway. He needs big minutes to put up big numbers, and he's not going to get those sort of minutes. I can't justify picking Rodney Stuckey in any sort of standard fantasy league. How do you see his season sort of projecting?
I think he's going to have a harder time. I think I wrote something for Nylon Calculus, our analytics site at HP, last week about his 39% 3-point shooting, and it's there's no way to paint it as anything besides like an absurd statistical outlier. I mean, before coming to the Pacers, he was an under 30% shooter for his career in like about 700 attempts, just under 700 attempts, and he shot 39% on like 140 attempts last year. So it's a really small sample. And then if you look at some of the NBA's sport view statistics, you can look at the percentage of his shots that were catch and shoot 3-pointers, and the percentage of his shots by how close the defenders were. He actually took a much more difficult mix of 3-pointers last year than he did in Detroit the season before. So I would expect that he's back, even if he's slightly improved, I would expect that he's, at best shooting maybe 32 or 33% on 3-pointers. And that means he's going to hopefully be taking a lot less of them. I think he's, some of his statistics were inflated last year because the Pacers were so ravaged by injuries. You know, he played a ton of games without Hill last year. And while he was generally more efficient, he sort of did a nice job slotting next to Hill once Hill came back. You know, his numbers were definitely inflated from that. So I would expect he has a smaller role. I would expect his per game numbers to decline, quite a bit. And he's going to do a lot more playing beside Hill and Monte Ellis. He's going to sort of have less opportunity to dominate the ball than he did, in some of those games last year where the Pacers essentially had nobody else.
Yeah, that's pretty. You're right in saying it's a statistical anomaly because it's just never something he's been able to do. And he was hitting at over 40% for big stretches of the season, which it was completely out of character for him. And I don't see how it can happen again. It was just like, okay, Ronnie Stuck is hitting 2 threes, okay, and then he does it again. He does it again. And go, oh, what's going on? This is a completely different guy. And I'm not into relying on now 3 months worth of something that you haven't been able to do for the last 7 years of your career.
Yeah.
Let's talk about guys who are sort of limited by their situation. So I want to sort of target players who we think that might become really useful fantasy guys if they were in a better situation. So if they were able to get big minutes. Now, the two that I'd probably mention are two we've touched on already. If Miles Turner was getting 30 minutes, he'd be great. And Chase Budinger, if he was to get 30 minutes, he'd be putting up big numbers. Is there anyone that we haven't touched on that you think's in a similar situation to that?
I don't know if he would ever be able to do it on this team, but I really like Lavoy Allen. He's another guy who was really solid for the Pacers, last year when just everybody was hurt. He's a really young guy too. I can't remember off the top of my head. I think he's 24, 25. But he essentially does two things really well. He's a good rebounder, particularly on the offensive glass, and he's a really good mid-range shooter, a good pick and pop player. And I think that limits him with the Pacers this year because I think they, after spending the last couple of years with David West, I think they really want 3-point shooting from that power forward spot, not just mid-range shooting. They really want to be able to sort of stretch the floor as much as possible. So I imagine his role would be shrunk with the Pacers, but if they have injuries, or if he's somebody who ends up getting traded somewhere else in the middle of the year and he gets closer to 25 or 30 minutes a game, I think he's a guy who will shoot a decent percentage and really really work the offensive glass.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that when he gets started sort of minutes, the rebounds are going to come. You're going to be looking at double digit rebounds on majority of nights. He's also going to be able to block some shots. And he's going to have some value in that sort of situation. It's going to be hard for him to get to that situation, but it is something that if he does, you're going to see a lot from him. Now, the big question mark hanging over this team is Paul George. The injury was horrible. It cost him the season. He came back at the end of last season and had a little cameo. I am worried about him because I've seen this sort of injury happen in a lot of players. In all sorts of sports, and it's ruined many careers, ended careers. Like, he's back. It's not ending his career, but I fear that he's never going to be the same Paul George again. He's currently being drafted at pick 24 in Yahoo leagues at the moment. If he was to be healthy, then he's a top 15 guy, but I think that the risk of that makes me not want to draft him inside those first two rounds. How concerned are you about this, the leg with Paul George?
You know, I don't know nearly enough to comment sort of on it medically and his long-term health, that kind of stuff. I maybe naively trust the team and the team doctors that, you know, if they say he's okay to be out there, then, you know, that he's not at any increased risk of hurting it further or of causing some other sort of compensation injury or anything like that. I think the mental side of it is the bigger deal. And you sort of saw that in the six games last year where he, he didn't have the same kind of, just sort of flying around the court, throwing his body around like he had in the past. I think he's a guy who can be really successful. I think he could lose a touch of his athleticism and still be really effective because he's so skilled, because he's so long, and because, you know, this is hard to say, but he's a guy who I think was better in the past when his role was slightly more constrained. I think yep. You saw that in the Pacers offense, that the more he tried to do, it sometimes hurt his efficiency, or he sometimes tried to do too much. And I think the idea was, well, he's still young and he's getting those reps, and someday he's going to be able to do those things. And so it'd be nice if he could still keep developing and get to that next tier. But I think it's not catastrophic if he needs to take a half step back and just be a very good player instead of a great one. I think he can still be really good in that role. He can still be a fantastic defender, can still be a great 3-point shooter. Pacers are going to use him at power forward a little bit this year. I think he can still punish, mismatches in and around the paint. You know, I don't think they're going to throw the ball to him on the block, but, you know, cross screens across the lane, little curls, catches at the elbows on the move, things like that. I think he can really take advantage of mismatches. So I think there are, you know, even if he's physically, 90 or 95% of what he was before the injury, I think he can still, I think he can still take advantage and be a really good player.
I agree. Like, I don't think it's going to end his career by any means. I think it's more that's going to take him 2 or 3 years to get close to being back to what he was before. And we're not going to see the same Paul George. We're going to see probably lower percentages. Maybe that might be offset by him playing closer to the basket as the four a bit more. And his athleticism will be reduced somewhat. And it just might take him time to get the confidence fully back. And he's still going to have pain issues. I'm sure he's still experiencing pain. He won't come out and say that, but I'm sure he's still having issues with pain and with swelling in his legs. And it's something that will probably last the rest of his career. And it's going to be no shock to me if he's never the same guy again. Not to say he can't be really good, but I'm not going to be shocked at all if he just never returns to that 2013-14 type Paul George, or even what he was able to do the season before. I think that you're going to be in for a bit of a risk if you're picking him inside the first round or even in that early second round. It's not a sort of spot I want to be looking at. End of the second round, maybe, but even then, the injury risk is not even re-injury risk. The fact that the injury reducing his output is a little bit worrisome to me.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it wouldn't be shocking if he's, if he needs more rest than he has in the past, you know, if he's a guy who occasionally they need to rest on the second night of a back-to-back, or, you know, he needs a couple extra days off here or there, just, you know, cause, whether it's because of pain or injury or anything like that, or just because the team wants to be extra careful with it, you know, and just play it a little more cautious than they would have otherwise.
Yep. I agree with that 100%. Now, I think we've touched on pretty much every player on this roster, unless you've got some really insightful things to say about Shane Whittington.
I think he's a good guy. I think the Pacers really like him.
I think they do too.
He's hung around for 2 years now, and he's, I guess, experimenting with a 3-point shot, and so maybe he's somebody who shows up and plays a little as a stretch four. We'll see how it goes, but he's a happy guy, and he seems to be enjoying himself regardless of whether he's playing or not.
Well, somebody's going to need to get minutes in that front court, and it said there's no real standout guy there. Mahinmi, Lavoie Allen, Rakeem Christmas, Shane Whittington, they're not big names by any stretch. So somebody is going to put their hand up and go, I deserve 20 minutes. I deserve 25 minutes. And if it's Shane Whittington, it's Shane Whittington. It's probably not going to be, but he's not completely out of the mix in that front court. Ian, who's your favorite player on this team?
Oh man, I don't know. I used to really like Paul George and I struggled the past couple of years watching him sort of butt up against his own limitations. And, you know, it was sort of like I was saying before, it was like he tried to do too much sort of before he was ready. And sometimes it was hard to watch. And I felt like the decision-making was not always great. So, but I like Paul George a lot. I guess George Hill, you know, he's a guy who I appreciate how much he has sort of put restrictions on his own game because of what's been asked of him. You know, his first 3-4 years in Indiana, he was dramatically different than the player he was with the San Antonio Spurs, because the Spurs needed him to be one thing and the Pacers needed him to be another. And he happily did it and went right along with it. And, I think it decreased his standing in the league. And, yeah. And, you know, he took a ton of flack. You know, he'd go to the Pacers Bleacher Report page, and it was, you know, every other week it was an article about, you know, trading George Hill and who could they get for George Hill, and, you know, if the Pacers could just get a point guard, it would solve all their problems. And so I really like George Hill, and I was really happy watching him sort of get to be himself last year and sort of have the freedom to really show what he can do offensively. That being said, it's kind of a bummer because I feel like he's going to have to step back into the shadows a little bit this year. So
I agree with that completely. George Hill's my guy also. Paul George is fine. He's got a lot of the highlight plays, but I really like what George Hill is able to do. And just if you look at what he did last season, he ended the season so hot. The last month of the season, he averaged 18.5 points, almost 2 threes a game, 5 rebounds and 6 assists, a steal a game, and he shot 52% from the field and 80% from the line and 38% from three. So he was carrying this team. He was doing so much work for them. And, yeah, I'm worried that this acquisition of Monte is going to drop him down. For fantasy-wise, I think that probably puts him around the top 80 mark. If you have to reach a round or two to get him, I don't hate that because, look, maybe they use him in preference to Monte. I think Monte is probably going to have a few things to say about that. But he's shown that he can, you know, if he needs to carry things, he can carry it and he can do it. And he did that fantastically last season. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. Of George Hill. What about all time though? When we talk all time Pacers, who's your favorite guy?
I started my NBA fandom, you know, when the Pacers were sort of up and coming with Reggie Miller and Rick Smits and Mark Jackson, and so those were my favorite teams. I love Reggie, and I'm sorry to everybody for his work as an announcer. I know it can be painful, but I loved watching Reggie play. I loved Rick Smits. You know, he was awkward, but he had such a delicate touch, such a nice jump shot. And then back on those teams, Derek McKee was one of my favorites. Derek McKee. played small forward for the Pacers for a couple of years before they added Chris Mullin. And he was just a guy who did the dirty work. You know, he was 6'9", 6'10", played small forward mostly, played some power forward. Always guarded the other team's best scorer. Just worked his butt off. The first Pacers game that I went to in person, I think Reggie did not play and McKee scored like 25 points. And I just remember being like in heaven. I got to see the Derek McKee game.
That is the Derek McKee game. It is hard to go past Reggie Miller, but I am going to go past Reggie Miller, and I'm going to go with Detlef Schrempf. Mainly because it's an awesome name. He had a super aggressive German flat top, and he was also a good player. He had stretches. I'm looking through his stats now. He had 2 seasons where he averaged over 9.5 rebounds a game, and that's, you know, he's not the biggest guy. He was also scoring 17-19 points a game. He had a season where he averaged 6 assists a game, which is incredible. I can't believe that he had a season averaging 6 assists a game. He was. He looked super awkward out there as well. Not quite as awkward as Rick Smits, but he just looked. He looks like a shrunken version of Kristaps Porzingis for anyone who didn't see Detlef Schrempf play. But he was super exciting to watch and just, you know, just got things done with German efficiency.
Yeah, he was a great one to watch too, and he had a lot of nice years with the Supersonics too, with Kemp and Payton.
Yeah, definitely. There was highlights of that on something yesterday. I was watching the Sonics versus the Nuggets when the Nuggets are the 8th seed and they upset them and Schrempf was playing there. It was about Mutombo going into the Hall of Fame, and they were showing. Mutombo had 8 blocks in game 5, and he had 31 blocks through a 5-game series. And I thought, that's ridiculous. And that's nothing to do with the paces, but yeah, Detlef Schrempf was there, and Mutombo was just destroying everybody who went near him.
I was actually, I covered the Hall of Fame ceremonies the past 2 days. I live about an hour from the Hall of Fame, so I went down and covered them, and I got to talk to Mutombo a little bit. He pointed out Kemp, and he said he loved Sean Kemp. Sean Kemp was one of his favorite players because Sean Kemp was fearless, and Kemp would always challenge him at the basket. And Mutombo said, you know, because of Kemp, I got to break all the NBA block records because he just kept coming at me.
Yeah, he definitely did. One of the blocks that he had on Kemp in that game 5 was crazy. But we're getting a little bit off track with Pacers talk. Anything you want to mention about the Pacers before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. I think they're going to be an interesting team to watch. I think you will know pretty quickly what they're going to be this year. I think we'll see early on how committed they are to this new style. I think even more than the sort of success and wins and losses and point differential, I think the biggest indicator of whether they're making forward progress is going to be the lineups they use and how much they really commit to this change in style. And if they're doing that early and the results aren't there, I would say maybe later on in the season it comes. But if they're starting Mahinmi and Jordan Hill, or if Jordan Hill and Lavoy Allen are playing 20 minutes a night next to each other, it's going to be an ugly season.
Yeah, it's I think that the biggest catchphrase or tagline I can think for this team is temper your expectations, because they're not going to be challenging for the title. They're not going to be challenging for a 1 or 2 seed. They're going to be trying to switch things around. Rebuild on the fly around some decent young talent, and see what they get out of these guys like Miles Turner. See how Monte fits in. It'll be interesting to see how it all works out. Ian, I thank you for coming on. Let's remind everyone where they find you on Twitter and where they find all your writings.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me. I'm at Hickory High on Twitter, and you can find me at Hardwood Paroxysm, Sporting News, and now the Cauldron subsection on Sports Illustrated.
Awesome. Make sure you are following Ian. Make sure you're following me as well, redrock_bball. And subscribing to this podcast if you haven't already, and leave a review, and hitting across to the Hardwood Paroxysm podcast center and checking out all the other podcasts there. And while you're at it, leave them all reviews as well, because there's some great shows that they put out over on that network. Ian, thanks again. It's been great having you on.
Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.